This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
It is 7:12. You're listening to the Evening Edition with Sharmila and Lynn. And now we're going to look into the unique challenges faced by migrants in the Sulu Sea living in Sabah.
Well, we're going to speak shortly, actually, to Dr. Vilashini Somia, and she has a new book out. She's from the Gender Studies Program at the University of Malaya, anthropologist from Sabah. We actually spoke to her fairly recently, and the book basically focuses on exactly this. It's a result of 13 months of field work, and I think it looks at an important topic, particularly about a community that perhaps those of us, especially here in the peninsula, don't think about.
So the book is called Irregular Migrants and the Sea at the Borders of Sabah, Malaysia, Pelagic Alliance. And it explores the ways in which these quote-unquote irregular migrants contest national sea boundaries, the trauma of being detained, deported, and other issues concerning the power of the state, really, as they draw support from the sea. We are really not the experts on this, so I am going to leave it to Dr. Vilashini to explain this further, but do weigh in. Is this something that you are aware of? You can call us 7733 2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, tweet us at BFM Radio. We're now joined by Dr. Vilashini Somia, anthropologist and senior lecturer at University Malaya. Vila, thanks for speaking with us. Now, to start off, could you tell us why you decided to write a book focused on the struggles of migrants from the southern Philippines? How did this come about?
So prior to my life in academia, I actually had these lofty ideals of wanting to be a filmmaker. And one of the earliest things that I did in sort of long form was a documentary. This was when I was studying in the States, and two teammates and I sort of came down to Lahad Datu at this point, right at the point in which the Sabah incursion was about to happen, because, you know, I had told many people about my experiences as a young person living in Sabah and really encountering a lot of members of the migrant communities and sort of living with them in a way that was very normalized. And it was only after I left the sort of comforts of this normalcy that I realized there was nothing very normal about it. I mean, normal in the sense that, of course, you know, the migrant crisis of the world is a very big thing. And in many places, it has become normalized, but it isn't normal in other parts of Malaysia. So, you know, at that time when we came down and we shot the documentary, I sort of realized that there was so many other larger issues to unpack rather than sort of focusing on just their struggles. It's just that this is an entire community that people do not discuss past their trauma, I think, and past their suffering and past the fact that they are, you know, illicit in the state. And so that's really how I sort of embarked on this particular topic academically. I felt that there was certainly a lot more to pursue and ask in the face of the migrant crisis in Sabah.
So to get everyone on the same page, tell us about who this community is. When we talk about irregular migrants in the context of Sabah and the Sulu Sea, who are you talking about?
I think a lot of people feel that when we do talk about the migrant community in Sabah, is that you sort of discuss them in a very, how do I say, two-dimensional kind of way, right? Anybody who isn't a member or a citizen of the state is automatically sort of put into this category. But I use the term irregular migrant partly because this is a term that is used academically, because the way in which somebody becomes a migrant or is seen to be illicit to the state comes in various forms. And many scholars have sort of discussed this. Sabah is a site for discussing this, where we see that you can become a migrant. The state often uses this term illegal migrant, but how one becomes illegal or illicit, it goes in multiple ways. You could be born to, say, what you call foreign worker parents, right, who had a visa when they came and that sort of got lapsed. You could also be born to a set of parents who were whose grandparents came and had a visa. And so now it's been two generations removed and, you know, you're born into to these conditions. Or you could be a product of a Malaysian parent or a Sabahan Malaysian parent, a citizen, and somebody who isn't a citizen, and therefore, you know, you sort of become stateless as a result of it. So the reason in which I use the term irregular here in this particular book is because there is no regularity to the way in which they can be, legal in the eyes of the state, right? So when I embarked on this particular research to write this book, I went out with just the intention to look for anybody who fit this very general definition, right? Because there's so many ways for you to be or to live or to be identified as an irregular migrant. Anybody who was willing to participate, or the term we use here at this point is a respondent to this study. And so these were the sort of personalities that I spoke to in Sabah.
Talk to us about the research and process involved in writing this book.
So this particular book is really a result of a PhD thesis that I did several years back. At the point when I knew, I went into the program knowing that I was going to study irregular migrants in Sabah. I didn't really know how that was going to work out, of course, but I knew this was the direction that I was headed. And after about a year or so of really heavy researching, a lot of reading, and heavy discussions with my advisors, I decided that it would be best if I were to conduct really long-form research in one of the districts in Sabah. I decided that it would be good to sort of do it in Sandakan, which, you know, because of its proximity to different parts of the Philippines, because for a long time it was, it sort of had a very active ferry route between parts of Philippines and Sabah itself. So I felt that it was a very good point to start from after the documentary. And I decided that I was going to go there simply because I knew that that would be an important starting point. So I went there because I had my own place, and I bought a 9-hand car that died on me 10 times perhaps or more. And through the assistance of NGO groups or religious bodies or just friends that I met along the way, I was introduced to different communities throughout Sandakan. And what I essentially did was I spent a lot of time with the community. There would be times that I would live with them. I basically, you know, participated in without being invasive, of course, in things that they were doing or on a daily basis, but with the intention of sort of understanding what this greater relationship was with the state, how it was that they would leave and return to Sabah. And in that process, I got to understand things like repatriation and, sort of cultural practices. And that was essentially how this book came together.
So what were the key issues that you wanted to highlight?
I think a lot of people will mistake this book as just a study of migrant communities and migrant lives. I think it's a lot more than that. A lot of academic work also wants us to do more than just study people. They want us to study ideas, right? They want us to sort of theorize and discuss larger issues pertaining to migration or, you know, things like that. And I was very taken with these ideas about space. And I wanted to understand this idea of placemaking, you know, the kind of emotions and stories and feelings and ideas and identities that we have created from places. We don't seem to think about space in the way other people think about spaces. And this is important because the way, say, if majority of or members of a status quo believe space A represents one thing and a minority group feels that space B represents something else, does it mean that the status quo is correct and they can sort of dominate the value of that space based on what they understand? And that everything that a minority group understands it to be is, you know, invalid? Of course not, right? So generally, that's one of the larger issues that I'm trying to argue for in this book.
And what's the relationship between the lives that these migrant communities lead, both in terms of their challenges and their livelihoods, and the sea?
So, you know, I think the sea is, I was just talking about spaces a few minutes ago. The sea is a living space. For many migrant persons, I think, or irregular migrants living in that part of the world, the sea has that kind of power and value. We don't think about the sea as living spaces or thriving spaces. We think about oceans and seas or water bodies as being very passive, that it must be protected. Our very precious land is surrounded by, you know, seas that surround it. People don't think of it the other way around, that you have some land surrounding very precious sea. And my time, my 13 months in interacting with migrants, you know, of all generations, different genders, and they have very different legal statuses in the States as well, are able to sort of articulate this relationship in very, very poignant and very, very interesting ways. And I think this gives us something to really think about, right? Perhaps one of the arguments is that we don't think a community is worth our time to sort of engage with or to interrogate the marginalization that they endure, or simply because maybe they occupy spaces that are not important to us. If we are able to understand certain spaces, and in this case, maritime spaces, as having a kind of relationship with a certain community, it might change the way we also understand the way in which we talk about spaces in relation to people.
Could you share some of the experiences that you've personally heard from migrants attempting to return to Sabah?
Oh, I've heard so many incredible stories. When I was studying this issue of repatriation, I think oftentimes the stories are very human. They're very human stories of pain and suffering and loneliness and separation and sadness. And of course, these will be the primary stories because I've never heard a happy story of repatriation. But the one story that I think really got me started with this book project is one that took place even before I went to Sandakan. And it was with one of the main individuals of the documentary, a man called Han, who had been deported multiple times. I remember in that conversation, he'd always say, you know, this happened, and it was very factual for him. I got repatriated here and I came back then, and it happened again here, and this is how I came back. And, you know, it's about trying to make enough money to make your way back. There's an entire process. In that conversation with Han, when he sort of discussed with me, you know, this is the third time in which I was deported from the state of Sabah. And this one was a really tough one because I really didn't know. I was morally and emotionally drained, and I didn't know how to find my way back. So it was going to be a really risky one because any sort of option that would come my way, I'd jump on, even if it meant that these boats would be, you know, in a very bad state, you know, and I didn't trust anybody. So, you know, I'm at complete risk. And so I asked him, weren't you afraid that something would happen? You know, what were the chances that you could essentially die at sea? And he said, oh, fear is something that every man on earth is always going to experience. This is a human condition, right? But I had to tell myself that, you know, don't be afraid, because you have a friend who's going to follow you back in the journey home to Sabah, as this friend has always done years and years past. And this friend is the sea, because the sea is my persecutor. It is my ally. It was a huge turning point for me because I don't think he was just merely being poetic. I think he was saying something that I wasn't paying attention to up until that point.
Now, one focus of the book, as you've mentioned a couple of times, is repatriation and how immigrants continue to return despite increasing border security. Talk to us about why this is so significant.
It's significant because I think as a policy and as a sort of legal practice that we have, it's clearly a policy that still has a lot of holes. If we are putting taxpayers' money and we are sort of assuring, I think, citizens of the state that this is the best way to deal with dangerous migrants, right, quote unquote, it's clearly not working in the way that I think the government thinks that it is. And I think, you know, in the face of an evolving, changing Malaysia, engagement, conversation, discourse is a very important process for us to have, right? And it's significant because it is encouraging, I think, at the very least, its readers to think about things that we take for granted that are in place as security markers that might not necessarily be working for the greater good.
So ultimately then, you know, in writing this book, getting it published, who's the target audience? Who are you hoping will read it?
Well, of course, anybody who writes books in academia, do not think other people are going to read their books at all, except for other academics, lah, of course. I wrote this book hoping that everybody would read it, and I know that's not necessarily the case always. But, you know, where possible, I think it's also very important that young people read it. I think younger people who are interested in issues that are happening in Sabah and people who are allies and friends of Sabah or people who are generally interested in things that are happening in Sabah. And also, you know, anybody who sort of works on migration or even the refugee issues anywhere in the world. So, you know, I'm also really hoping that at some point this book can be translated into Bahasa Malaysia, because I think there's also a value in speaking to friends who don't necessarily, you know, read in English, so that, you know, it can certainly be a book for Malaysians.
Vila, thanks for speaking with us. That was Dr. Vilashini Somia, anthropologist and senior lecturer at University Malaya. If you're interested to know more or to purchase the book, you can head over to vilashinisomia.com. And that title of the book, once again, is, it's a pretty long one, Irregular Migrants and the Sea at the Borders of Sabah, Malaysia, Pelagic Alliance. If you'd like to weigh in, send your thoughts our way. That number to WhatsApp, 018-789-8899. Tweet us at BFM Radio. And after this on Popcorn Culture, we're going to be talking about art house cinema, whether you're a fan, whether you're not, whether you love the movies that sometimes don't make a lot of sense. So keep it here on the Evening Edition, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my. BFM 89.9, the business station.